You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I will be doing this alone today because David Rommel, my usual co-host, of course, is dealing with the fallout of Hurricane Irma. And so to David, I've checked in with him earlier today. He's okay. You know, they're obviously dealing with all of the things, the lack of power. But him and his family, they're okay, right? The best you can hope for. And to all of you who, of course, are in Florida and listening to this or have family or friends that have been affected by the hurricane, my thoughts go out to you and yours, hoping that everybody's okay. I know my family is still back in Fort Lauderdale. My brother is in Orlando. He's without power. My family is okay. And fortunate that they didn't get hit too hard. And I hope that everybody in your life is doing okay and dealing with the fallout of Irma best that they can. But if you are fortunate enough to have power or be able to be listening to this, we're going to have a mailbag for you. So maybe your power's off or you just can't go outside or you're just in between cleaning up things and you're able to just kind of relax for a few minutes and you just want to get away from it, take in some Miami Heat content. Well, I'm here for you. So we're going to do a Locked On Heat mailbag. We'll start with the first question here. This comes from Billy Kuhn, who asks, I thought I'd mix the question up a bit and ask you about your opinion on NBA fans and their feelings toward players and ownership. Now, this is a long one, so bear with Billy here. When the Heat decided not to bring back the 2015-16 team that had a starting five of Dragic, Joe Johnson, Dwayne Wade, Luol Deng, and Hassan Whiteside, how come fans became more upset about the players leaving for more money elsewhere than they were about Mickey Arison not footing the bill for a Heat team that was one game away from the Eastern Conference Finals, with a strong balance of proven veterans and up-and-coming players? I think that team would have not been the smoothest team to watch compared to the 16-17 team that we actually saw that ran the beautiful drive-and-kick game that won the Heat 30 of their last 41 games, but the team was built for playoff basketball. I think that team would have been just as competitive as Boston was. Yes, I understand that's still not good enough to win a championship, but why do fans care more about owners' pocketbooks than they do about players getting paid fairly? Many Heat fans were upset about Wade leaving, but he took the pay cuts for a long time and Miami didn't do anything to help pay him back really towards the end. And his pay cuts were during his prime, not the tail end of his career like Dirk and the Mavs have been doing. I mean, Dolan and the Knicks and Gilbert and the Cavs have their flaws, but they're not afraid, like, say, owners like Mickey Arison, to go in deep to pay for those teams. I remember Arison trading Joel Anthony and using the amnesty clause on Mike Miller really hurt the team's chemistry going into another finals back during the Big Three era. What are your thoughts on fans blaming players for seeking greener pastures and larger paydays, but supporting owners for not paying the luxury tax? Why don't fans seem to get upset with the teams that deal with the business side, but they really get nasty when players operate on the business side? Long, but poignant and important to talk about. So it's a good question, Billy. First of all, I want to address the 2015-16 team, the one with Luol Deng and Joe Johnson. They couldn't bring back Deng and Johnson under the salary cap. They just couldn't. There wasn't an opportunity to. They didn't have Joe Johnson's bird rights. They didn't have Luol Deng's bird rights. So they couldn't go over the cap and therefore dip into the luxury tax to retain those guys. Nobody thought Luol Deng was going to get the kind of contract that he ended up getting from the Lakers. Nobody thought he would get that sort of deal. He was an option for the Heat to bring back until the Lakers offered him what they offered him. And at that point, I mean, you couldn't blame the Heat for not matching that, because of course you weren't going to pay Luol Deng $18 plus million a year when you have Dwayne Wade as a free agent and Tyler Johnson as a free agent, Hassan Whiteside was a free agent. So Luol Deng was just the cost of somebody else outbidding the entire market, seemingly. And as far as Joe Johnson goes, that was understood as a one-year rental. He got bought out by the Nets the year before. He was getting paid by the Nets while playing for the Heat on a minimum contract. But he's not a minimum contract player. Utah came in, offered him a substantial amount of money. And in order, that same summer, the Heat paid Whiteside what is now the largest pay increase in NBA history from what he was getting paid, which was basically a near D-League contract, to a max salary. And so they foot the bill there, right? They paid Whiteside what it took to bring him back. They paid Tyler Johnson. Whether or not you agree Tyler Johnson's worth the money or not is irrelevant to this point, where, yes, they paid him. And they had the out. They could have just let Brooklyn have him. They created the offer sheet. They said, no, we want this guy. We're going to pay him. And with Dwayne Wade is where it gets dicey. It's the situation is, do you believe that the Heat didn't want to pay Wade or repay Wade for all the years and all the money he's given up? Maybe they didn't think he was worth it. Maybe they took it for granted. Maybe they just assumed he would take another pay cut and just fit his salary in where it was needed when all was said and done. Or if you believe some of the conspiracy theories, then maybe Pat Riley manufactured this whole situation. He never wanted Wade back in the first place. There's that possibility. So there's a lot of... It's not as simple as the Heat didn't want Wade back, or the Heat wanted Wade back but weren't willing to pay X amount of dollars. I think there was miscommunications. I do think that the Heat were genuinely remorseful that Wade left. But I don't know how much they would have been willing to pay Wade in the first place. I don't know. It seemed like towards the end there they were willing to come up to where Chicago was paying them, but by then that bridge had been burned, and Wade wanted to leave because he felt disrespected. And this is just the general consensus of reports that we've been getting, is this is the storyline. Maybe the Heat should have been more open to paying Wade earlier. That said, that's that summer. But in the past, you're right. Billy's right here, that Mickey Arison has not been willing to go into the luxury tax, maybe as much as he should have, right? Trading Joel Anthony and using the amnesty clause, that one-time amnesty on Mike Miller, hurt that locker room. It rubbed specifically LeBron James the wrong way. That's why LeBron, when he left in the summer of 2014 and went to Cleveland, he wanted a guarantee. He wanted a promise from the Cavaliers and their ownership that they would spend the money. And you've seen Cleveland spend the money. They've had one of the highest paid rosters, if not the highest paid roster in the NBA since LeBron got there. They've been willing to make moves. They've been willing to spend the money. They've been one of the highest paid teams in the league since LeBron got there. That was important to LeBron. It was important to LeBron because he saw the other side of the coin. He saw that Mickey Arison got rid of guys, which were good basketball decisions. Mike Miller was not worth the money he was making. And every team got an amnesty clause, and he was the obvious candidate if you asked anybody. This wasn't a surprise. It was not a surprise when they amnestied Mike Miller. Everybody expected it. Nobody expected Mike Miller to get the injuries that he got when he signed with the Heat that summer of 2010. He was supposed to be Shane Battier before Shane Battier got there. The Heat were fortunate that they got Shane Battier to play the role that Mike Miller was supposed to play, which was spacing the floor and playing good defense. Mike Miller got hurt too many times, couldn't stay on the court, and so he was an obvious candidate for the amnesty. That, to me, isn't Mickey Arison's fault. Joel Anthony, that hurt. But then again, how many locker room guys do you have to keep on the team? Does everybody on the team besides LeBron have to be a locker room guy? Because they kept Udonis Haslam. Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh obviously were the focus of that team. They were the trio that built that team. They were also great locker room guys. Shane Battier, great locker room presence. Mario Chalmers was a great locker room presence. I mean, everybody on that team seemed to get along. Chris Anderson, great locker room presence. You can't just keep guys because they were a great locker room presence. You could argue that, if anything, they should have cut ties with those guys earlier and brought in other young guys. Because another reason LeBron left was because the Heat didn't seem like they had a plan for 2, 3, 4 years down the road. Who was the next young guy? Who was the young guy that was going to help keep the dynasty moving? Who was their Kawhi Leonard going to be? Who was their Danny Green going to be? They didn't have that. Maybe they spent too much time using those last few roster spots on good locker room guys. They didn't have the legs in the finals in 2014 against the Spurs. They were wiped off the floor. They didn't have enough young players. They didn't have the legs after three previous trips to the finals. So you could see that too in Cleveland this last year. What is the Cavaliers' plan? Yeah, they have Kyrie Irving, who's younger, and Kevin Love, who's relatively young. LeBron's in great shape, of course, as always. But they didn't have anybody that could defend the Warriors at that level. They were ran off the floor in the finals this last year. Because what did LeBron want? He wanted them to use valuable roster spots. You've only got 15 of them. And he wanted to use a valuable one on somebody like Dante Jones, who's been out of the league for 2 years or something. So you need to strike a balance there. Now, I'm not blindly defending Mickey Arison. I think the team should have been more upfront with Dwayne Wade. I think that there's ways to find workarounds. Keeping locker room guys who are important. But he's a good owner. Mickey Arison's a good owner. And Heat fans are fortunate that they don't deal with somebody like Dolan on the Knicks, who consistently, yes, he spends the money. Yes, he's very willing to spend the money. It's not his money. he's a kid that got all his money from his dad. He doesn't care about the money. He just spends the money. He just spends the money. He spends the money on the Knicks like he spends the money on banjos and harmonicas and new cars. Like it's just money to him. It's not a big deal. And he's a bad owner because he just continually gets in the way of the people he hires and just doesn't, and gets in the way of the organization and makes a fool out of himself and the Knicks team, Knicks franchise. Gilbert, his ego gets in the way. Mickey Arison is egoless, at least on the basketball side of operations. He doesn't get in the way of things. He just pays people. Is he a little tight with money? Yes. But then again, he was given an amnesty clause to waive Mike Miller. No charge. Nowadays, you have to come to a buyout agreement. You still have to pay the guy. Him and every owner were given a one-time option, a one-time tool to use. You can get rid of one player, no penalty. Amnesty their contract, no penalty. And he did. Just like every other team in the NBA did. That said, the second part of Billy's question: what are your thoughts on fans blaming players for seeking greener pastures and larger paydays, but supporting owners for not paying the luxury tax? Why do fans seem to get upset with teams that deal don't get upset with teams that deal with quote unquote business side, but get nasty when players operate on the quote unquote business side, such as burning their jerseys and things like that? Look, fans root for their teams. And they root for the players on their teams. But you root for the team regardless of who plays for it. I've been rooting for the Dolphins since I was born. I don't like any of the players this year. I like Jarvis Landry. But there's 50-something players on an NFL roster. And I like 1, 2, 3 of the players I give a crap about. And honestly, if they traded Jarvis Landry tomorrow, I wouldn't care a whole lot. But I continue to root for the Dolphins. They're my team. Jerry Seinfeld put it best. Fans root for laundry. You're cheering for laundry. When you're rooting for the Heat, you're rooting for the red and the black. You're rooting for the Heat logo. You're rooting for that piece of clothing that that player has, and you're rooting for that player because he's wearing your team's uniform. I'm not telling you that it's being a fan is stupid. It's one of the most unique experiences there are. It's just being a fan of a team for life and being a dedicated fan. But the truth is, the matter of this is that you root for the players only because they play on your team. Now, you might have players that you like to play or like to watch play in other parts of the league, but you don't cheer for them like you cheer for your guys. You don't. So that's why the owner who represents the team, who owns the team, usually gets the better end of that deal is when some player leaves, right? When Dwayne Wade, for example, leaves, the owner is still there. Dwayne Wade is gone. You're going to root for your team, and the owner owns that team, so he gets a little bit of a leeway, you know? And I'm not saying it's right. It's probably not right. I envy those people that are LeBron James. You all know the LeBron James fan. Who's your team? Well, I love the Cavaliers. LeBron James is there. You know the guy. He's born, you know him. He's born and raised in Florida his whole life. Probably never even left the state. But right around 2004, 2005, 2006, became a really big Cavaliers fan because he loves LeBron James and had the shoes. Had the jersey, everything, right? You know who I'm talking about. You know this guy. And then in 2010, flipped to a Heat fan because he loved LeBron James. And in 2014, went back to a Cleveland fan because, of course, LeBron went back to the Cavs. I almost envy those guys because it seems more logical to root for the player. You like the player. That player will always be the same player. Yeah, they might get better and worse towards the end of their career, blah, 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 blah. But it's always LeBron James. It's always Dwayne Wade. I envy the people who just root for the player. It just seems easier. It seems more logical, if anything. The Heat, they could change their whole roster next summer. They could trade your favorite player right now. And that's why this Boston situation, the Kyrie Irving trade with Isaiah Thomas was so important, is that it really reminded people. After years and years and years of LeBron leaving, Kevin Durant left, Gordon Hayward left, these guys, Kyrie Irving wanted out. Of players trying to decide their fate, we finally got an all-star moved who didn't want to move. Isaiah Thomas loved the Boston Celtics, loved the city of Boston, loved the fans, and yet he was traded for Kyrie Irving. That's the business side of things, right? That's why it's important to remember that. So there's no, the moral of the story is not to root for the team or is not to blame the team or side with ownership or side with the players. Don't side with anybody. Just understand. Don't side with anybody. Don't side with anybody. Continue to root for the Heat or whoever, you know, continue to root for your team and then just support that player. Just wherever that player goes, support that player. If they left for more money, would you do the same thing? You'd think about it at the very least. If you got a contract like Luol Deng was, peace out. I'm out of here. You're paying me. They're going to pay me an insane amount of money, and even I know that, and I'm Luol Deng. And this, I'm not worth this contract. That was obvious to everybody, including Luol Deng. $18 million a year. Yeah, you leave, and you get to go play in L.A.? Hell yeah. But support that player in his life decision. Continue to root for the Heat. Support that player. You could do both. And when that player comes back to play in Miami, oh yeah, I remember him. Those were good times. That's it. You don't have to boo. You don't have to cheer. You don't need the tribute videos. Just let it be. Root for your team. Support the players that have passed through. That's it. Root for your team and support the players that have passed through. All right, our next question comes from Jeff Nicholas on Twitter. A lot of angst about Dragic wearing down in Eurocamp. Won't the Heat just manage him during training camp conditioning drills? But before we answer that question, I want to talk to you about SeatGeek. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be a complicated process, but there is a better, smarter way to buy, and that is with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get live tickets or get tickets to live events. Not live tickets. They're not They're not, like, alive. They're not animals. They're just tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. They help you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person. SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I've said a couple times on this show that I'm done seeing concerts for the rest of the year, but I have used SeatGeek for every show that I've seen this year. That includes Jack Johnson, John Mayer, don't make fun of me. I saw Green Day. They were phenomenal in the Oakland Coliseum. But then I just recently got an alert that Vince Staples is going to be in the Bay Area. So I'm going to be using SeatGeek to go see Vince Staples here pretty soon. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. They save you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, they grade every ticket based on value so you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed so you can shop for tickets with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, Locked On Heat listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code LONBA today. That's promo code LONBA to get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. All right, so the question was, are we concerned with Dragic wearing down in the FIBA Euro Cup? I'm not. And I've seen this a lot. I'm not concerned. I'm not concerned because he's playing well. He's the fifth highest scorer at 21.9 points a game. He's shooting 48%, 33% from three-point range, which could be better. But overall, he's playing great. He looks like he's in great shape. Are you watching this? He's in great shape. He's fast. He's quick. He's competitive. He's got that fiery edge that we love about Goran Dragic. He looks great. Now, am I worried about him wearing down over the course of the season? These guys all play basketball. All year round. Look at what's happening in Houston right now. James Harden, Chris Paul, and Carmelo Anthony have been playing basketball for the last several days together. You don't think that that's as competitive as Eurobasket? I mean, I understand that training and competitive basketball are two very different things. But these guys are playing basketball all year around. They take a few weeks off, but mostly they're playing basketball. I don't have a problem with this. Nobody asks if LeBron and Carmelo Anthony and these guys who compete for Team USA, if you're worried about them coming back. These guys play basketball. It's what they do. They love it. They play all the time. They play all the time. Dragic is only playing, he's not even playing 28 minutes a game, by the way. He's playing 27.9 minutes a game. Those are low minutes compared. Those are almost 10 fewer minutes than what he plays in a competitive game in Miami. He's going to be fine. He's in great shape. Him and Russell Westbrook. I've got the stats here somewhere. Him and Russell Westbrook entered the league the same year, right? Here it is. Dragic has played 17,867 minutes in 9 seasons. Westbrook has played 22,786 minutes in those 9 seasons. That's the equivalent of Westbrook playing 2 more seasons than Dragic. So even though Dragic and Westbrook entered the league the same year, 9 seasons ago, Westbrook has played the equivalent of 2 more seasons. That is insane. Dragic has played as many minutes as John Wall, who entered the league 2 full years later. Nobody asks, are you concerned about John Wall wearing down? All you hear about Goran Dragic is on the other side of 30. Are you worried that he's going to wear down? Nobody asks if you're concerned about John Wall wearing down. Dragic is closer to John Wall than he is a veteran point guard. He hasn't been in the league that long. When you look at just the minutes, he hasn't played that much. When you look at the minutes, he hasn't played that much. Now, there's obviously wear and tear that happens when you get into your 30s. But, like I said, Look how he's playing right now. He looks great, man. He looks great. I'm not concerned. I'm reassured. I'm pumped. This makes me reassured. Dragic looks great. He'll be fine. All right, last question. It's not even my question. I'm stealing this from Ask Ira because this was brought to my attention on Twitter, and I'm gonna chime in here. So on Ask Ira's daily column for the South Florida Sun Sentinel, you can find it online. People send him questions as well, and one of the questions that he was asked was, if Justice Winslow isn't able to beat out Rodney Magruder and Josh Richardson with ease, why are we keeping him? He has more talent than both of them put together. If he can't use that talent and beat out the 40th pick in the same draft as him and a former D-League player, we don't need him. At some point, having talent is meaningless if you don't go long enough without utilizing it, and we're almost at that point for Justice. Now, before I even give you my own reaction, I'm going to give you Ira's. Friend of the program, by the way, Ira Wunderman. I'm going to give you his response. He said, but starting isn't about having your five best players on the court. It's about chemistry. With James Johnson so integral to the Heat's success over the last season's final 41 games, and with three-point shooting so essential to the starting group, it could be that Justice winds up best paired with Kelly Olynyk in a second unit. It is interesting that we haven't heard anything about a Richardson extension at a time the Heat have to decide about the next stage of Winslow's contract, as if weighing those two options collectively. Nonetheless, I believe the Heat continue to take the long view with Winslow, which has to be the approach with a 21-year-old. I agree with Ira completely. It's almost as if he's been listening to this show. We've said this multiple times on this program that the best option for Miami's rotation is to start Josh Richardson and bring Winslow off the bench. Start Josh Richardson and James Johnson and bring Winslow off the bench in James Johnson's role from last season off the bench, right? Play Winslow in last season's James Johnson role. And that way you have Josh Richardson in the starting lineup. You get his three-point shooting and his above-average defense and ability to create turnovers and quicken the pace that way. You get him at the three. James Johnson at the four. That's what makes sense. You want chemistry. Look, Andre Iguodala is one of Golden State's five best players. There's no doubt about it. He doesn't start for them. Enes Kanter is one of Oklahoma City's four best players. He doesn't start for them. It's really insignificant who starts and who doesn't. It's even more important who ends games. But even that is a little bit more overblown than it needs to be. The end of game lineup has gotten a little bit overrated over the last couple of years. That's coincided with the evolution of the death lineup, which for Golden State ends a lot of games for them. It's more important than the starting unit, but it's a little overrated. The rotation in general is what matters, and I'm really interested in those last couple of minutes of the quarters and of the halves. That's what I'm really interested in, because you could see small ball units come in at that time, a little umph before the break. As far as Justice Winslow goes, he doesn't need to start. This is my argument with Tyler Johnson. Oh, you pay him so much money, he should be the starter. No, he's better as the bench player. You pay him all this money, play him where he's best, coming off the bench. That's where he's best. He always plays better when he comes off the bench as opposed to when he starts. So play him there. He'll be more worth his money playing better coming off the bench. This is the same philosophy with Justice Winslow. If he's going to be better off the bench, like he was his rookie year, remember? Then play him there. Bring him off the bench. Maybe one day he develops into a starter. I'm not saying he can't start now. He's a better player right now than Josh Richardson. Josh Richardson fits what the team needs in the starting unit way better than Justice Winslow. Those two things are completely separate. Completely separate. And that's okay. That's the way the NBA is. And that's fine. Winslow's still going to play plenty of minutes. So will Josh Richardson. Rodney Magruder might not play as much. We said in the last week's show with Josh Lloyd for Locked On Fantasy Basketball, Magruder's a guy, he's going to see spot minutes here and there. He might get a start in the case of injury. He's not going to get consistent minutes. Winslow will, Richardson will, even if Winslow doesn't start. And I agree 100% with Ira. We've said it on this program. Justice Winslow coming off the bench with Kelly Olynyk makes a lot of sense. Olynyk can space the floor from the five. in a way that Hassan Whiteside can't. It makes a lot of sense to pair Winslow with him. Give him space. Give him the room to roam. Winslow will be better for it. It makes sense. Don't give up on Justice Winslow, guys. He's only played one season and 18 injury-plagued games. Don't give up on Justice Winslow. He's really good. Don't look beyond the stats. There are things that Winslow has that you cannot teach. Explosive first step. Underrated athleticism. Elite, and I mean elite, defensive instincts. Elite. As good as anybody in the NBA, defensive instincts. Never mind the shooting. That will get better eventually. Great court vision. Things you can't teach, guys. He's got those things. Be patient with Justice Winslow. All right, that's all we have for today, whether you're listening on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to SeatGeek, the smartest and easiest way to find tickets for games. Use the promo code LOHEAT, get $20, or LONBA, sorry, to get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. That's the promo code LONBA, get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Send mailbag questions, get information about advertising, or leave your comments at lockedonheat@gmail.com. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time.